Welcome to the Journey of a Christian Dad podcast. I'm your host, Dan Lewigs. Who is the spiritual leader of your family? Is it you, your pastor, your spouse, the media? Do you know? I did, and sadly, no one was taking responsibility to lead our family. Well, friends, someone needs to take that job, and that man is you. You may not feel qualified, and some days I don't. With the help of God and a community of dads helping each other on their journey, you can be the leader your family deserves. We welcome you to the Journey of the Christian Dad podcast. All right. We have got some great things lined up for you, not only today, but the next few guests that we've got coming up are just gangbuster guests. I'm really, really excited for about the next five guests we've got lined up. And today we've got a fantastic guest that I'm super excited to share with you today. Before we dive into that, let me just do a quick podcast review. This one comes from Apple Podcasts, and this comes from Terry J. So thank you, Terry J, for giving us a five-star review. All Christian Dads Need This Show is the headline. And what a great show for Christian dads. There are so many discussions that dads will benefit from. I highly recommend this podcast. So thank you, Terry J. Appreciate you listening to the podcast and sharing with your friends. And always love reading these five-star reviews that people leave for us. So thank you very, very much. And if you haven't left a five-star review, consider leaving one. And with that, let's dive in. Let's jump into this week's guest. We've got Jason Minershagen with us. He's nodding his head. I actually said his last name.
You got it right. You got it right. I was wondering.
We are on a roll. We've
known each other we've known each other long enough, but it's still funny to me, or it's interesting for me to call you Dan instead of your F3 name. So
yeah. So Jason is an F3 guy. He goes by the name Cherry Limeade. So if any of the F3 guys are out there in orbit anywhere and see the name Cherry Limeade across the country, that's who we're talking with today. He is a dad, a husband, a firefighter, and also now soon to be a book author. He compiled a really cool book called Notes from Dad that took quite a long time for it to gel and come together with the right mix of people. And anyway, welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, excited to have you. Excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about kind of your upbringing. Give us a picture of what formed you into the man you are today.
So I was born in Buffalo, New York. Lived there for a couple of years. Dad moved around quite a bit, we moved around quite a bit for Dad's jobs, and spent a couple of years in California. Spent a 2-year stint. I call it a stint because it was a rough couple of years in Texas, Hamilton, Texas. For anybody that might be listening, I'm 100% confident. Well, I'll say 99.9% confident. Nobody knows where that's at. It's such a blip on the radar. It's so small, but it's not too far from the Waco area. It's like Central Texas. Early middle school, late elementary school, like my fourth and fifth grade years. But I spent in Texas. Had a rough couple of years there. My parents separated there for a year. And my dad moved up to Southwest Missouri. I have three brothers. I'm the second of three. When they separated, they sold that separation to me as, hey, dad's going to move up to take this new job up in Missouri. And, you know, we know you're struggling down here and having a hard time adjusting and fitting in and just really having a hard time in general. And so we want you to, you know, what do you think about going up there with him? And we think it'd be better for you. And so at the time, I didn't necessarily even know that they were separated, but I did know that, you know, something wasn't right. It didn't feel right being separated from mom for a year and my three brothers for a year. So that's where I ended up spending the rest of my school years, childhood all the way through high school. I graduated in Southwest Missouri, Nevada, Missouri, just north of Joplin, if you're familiar with Joplin. I was raised by my parents. Let me back up. So my parents did end up getting back together again. After about a year, my mom and three brothers moved back up with us. And my mom and dad stayed together right up until she passed away on New Year's Day, 2011. So just 12, 13 years ago. Dad's still alive today. We got a pretty good relationship now. Our common theme now is Kansas City Chiefs tickets. I've been a season ticket holder, so that's he and I stay connected through that pretty well. Plus the grandkids keep him pretty well connected, so that's good. But you know, I was both of them were believers, were Christians. So I was always raised in that Christian home, that Christian environment, going to church every Sunday night, back again on Wednesdays, active in the youth group, just active in the community, in doing things within the youth group and within the church. And I actually walked down front and made a profession of faith in like the fifth grade down in Texas. But I've looking back on that over the years, I realized that was such a small town. I think that was like a peer pressure thing. I think that was like, hey man, you're not, you know, this is just what we do. It wasn't really real for me at the time. But I was baptized then. And then in the youth group in Missouri, we attended some conference. I don't remember what it was, but it was another conference, and I felt that pull again, or that for the first time, really. Sorry, I felt that pull to make that profession of faith and kind of make it real. And so I went down and was rebaptized. I felt like that was important because I didn't feel like the first time was real. And so moving through high school then, now with that understanding of who I was as a Christian, honestly, I took a turn. Like I took scripture where it says, you know, the summation of it is, you know, once saved, always saved. You know, that we can't lose our salvation when it's a genuine salvation. So I took that and kind of warped it and said, well, if that's the case, I can go do whatever I want, right? I can go live a life of selfishness and pride and really just hedonistic lifestyle, just living for me. And that's what I did. I moved into my college years and partied it up and met my future wife. And man, just had a really, really hard couple of years because the further I walked away from God, the further that fellowship, you know, kind of broke. And so we struggled for a lot of years. We got married in 93, so coming up on, in June of 93, so coming up on 30, what is this, 24, 30, 31 years. Been together 32 years, but married 30, 31-ish almost. And I remember, for me, what even then, like my faith wasn't really real because I was still living that selfish lifestyle. I still don't know how we survived the first 10 years of marriage. She always says it was, you know, that she was the selfish one, and I beg to differ 100% because we probably both were living a little bit of selfishness, but she
Not
was
to
definitely
interrupt,
the.
but Shaquille O'Neal, his ex-wife, she, wrote a book and everything and said, we split up infidelity, and she goes, now that Shaq has publicly professed some infidelity, I can talk about it without, making him look bad and everything else. And she says, recently quoted out of her book was, I don't know that I ever loved him. And Shaq's comeback was, I don't blame you. I don't think I could have loved me either. And she said, with him being, pursued by so many women and everything else, and him trying to be a great husband and great father, but also being on this other side of the world as well, of leaning into these women. And but whatever, that selfish hedonistic lifestyle, it's like you got to die to yourself and, be willing to serve your wife and look out for her needs and like truly care for her. So when I hear you say that, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so funny how so many of us guys do, reach that turning point in our marriage where we're either for our marriage or we're for ourselves, or we're for Christ or we're for ourselves. And it's a constant battle, maybe for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, hopefully not for most guys. But I think you're right on it. I think for
But I mean,
me,
like you may be sold out for Christ and all there, but then certain days things come your way, and so the battle might be smaller and smaller and lesser, for all your life, but there's still days where you're pulled back a different direction where you never are 100% victorious every day of your life. Like there's something that
Correct.
gets there. And if you're 50% sold out and then you get sucked back in and you're down at 40 or 30, well, a little harder to fight from that position.
It is 100%. And like you said, the longer you go, with fewer and fewer victories in that regard, or really in anything, I'll use this as an example. The longer we go without spending time in the Word, the harder it is to get time and spend that time in the Word, and the farther we drift away from who God wants us to be, who God's calling us to be. You know, we can't be in relationship with Him without having time with Him. You know, we can't expect Him to walk with us when we're not walking with Him. If that makes sense, I'm trying to say there, but
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, we have to put the time in.
When you got a best friend that you don't ever spend time with, it's hard to.
Yeah, same concept. Like with marriage, like I can't expect my marriage to be a thriving, healthy, vibrant relationship if I'm not willing to put in the time on more days than just her birthday and Mother's Day. You're right. Like we have to invest some time into that and work at it, for lack of better terms. It shouldn't be work, but it should be some effort put into it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, the guys that say, oh, 365 days a year, it's Mother's Day for my wife. Like, or Valentine's Day and all that stuff. I'm like, when was the last time you did something that truly made her feel like that you loved her? I know it's 365, but like today, what was the thing? Or yesterday, what was the thing?
Well, we get complacent, right? Like we think we landed the hot chick. We're here. We're like, I don't have to compete with any other women. I've got this all figured out. And so we stop wooing her. We stop romancing her. We stop dating her, like we did before we put the ring on our finger. And that's a daily struggle for me. Like, just staying in that mindset of, what have I done today to woo my wife?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I meet with a guy weekly, and often we do talk about our marriage, and we talk about just, we're going through a lesson today, and like kind of a check mark some boxes and rate yourself in these different areas. And we, you know, got finished. And I looked at him, I go, this one was kind of easy, huh? And he's like, yeah, this one kind of was. Like, thankfully we've read a few pages and done a few exercises, and we're in a pretty good routine. And since we weekly reflect on our marriage and what we've done well and opportunities for growth, it's like, we got some pretty good scores. And still found each one of us had two different opportunities for growth. And through our conversation, I recognized an extra opportunity that, wasn't apparent on the surface until we had a discussion. And, yeah, it's super, super important. So marriage is going good now. It was okay back when you guys were leading your selfish lives.
It was okay. I think, I think I know what changed that for us. That turning point, was 2001, 9/11, 9/11 happened. And, we, at the time, we'd been married for 8 years and never really had, that I recall, a meaningful husband-wife conversation about God, faith, what we believed, how we grew up in the church. He grew up Church of Christ. I grew up Southern Baptist. So a little bit different kind of theologies in our upbringing, but still a love for the same God and the same Jesus, just different practicing and doctrinal, some doctrinal differences. But we never had that conversation, right? Like, so we're 8 years married. 2001, I think we had already been foster parents to a couple of babies, and we had just adopted our daughter at the time. She's 24 or 5 now. She was born in 99, so I'm doing math there. She'd have been a toddler. We had just adopted her through the foster care system, and 9/11 happened. So I was in April. So maybe just a couple months into being a dad, and I credit her with being the one to force me into adulthood, for lack of better terms. That manhood, like, hey, you know, it's one thing to live for yourself when you don't really have anybody else to live for, but when you sign on the line and take responsibility for somebody else's childhood, somebody else's life, you know, it forces you to kind of reevaluate how we're living. And that's what it did for me. It forced me to step up and become a man, really. 9/11 happens, and I remember driving across the state with my wife to go visit family, and very vividly remember this conversation. I don't remember a whole lot of conversations, but I remember this one because it was so pivotal in my faith and my journey back towards Christ. I just remember looking at her and saying, you know, I don't want to stand before God in eternity and have him say to me, Jason, you were right. You warped my scripture when you said once saved, always saved. And then you just kind of walked, did your own thing. But you're right. Once saved, always saved. So yes, you're welcome into heaven. But your kids, I don't know your kids, and they can't come because you didn't introduce them to me. Your parents introduced you to me. And so that's why you get to be here. But you didn't introduce your daughter to me, so she can't come. I don't want that on my conscience for eternity, right? I'm like, man, I can't. I wouldn't be able to. I can't have that. So what? She agreed and just like, well, so what's next? Like, what are we gonna do about it? What are we gonna do about it? Because we're on different doctrinal. You know, where are we at? And we landed. We started church shopping and landed at the church here close to home, and it was for the first 2 years, very much perfunctory, surface level, going because I wanted my kids to have an opportunity. It wasn't for me. I wasn't in that space. I'd spent so many years hardening my heart, not in that relationship and that fellowship with God, that it took him 2 years of weekly messages, sitting in church, to kind of start to peel those layers back of the hardness that I've put around my heart. And I still remember, like, for probably 4 or 5 weeks, I would just walk away from each Sunday message, like, just crying. Just there were several of them I had to get up and walk out, just convicted. Finally hit that point where I'm like, okay, this is getting real. Let's recommit. Like, this is, I'm all in, right? Like, let's go. If we're gonna do this for them, then it's, I can't live with this guilt and this conscience. So I just kind of reconfess, just confessed it all. I just laid it all out there and gave it all up. Just literally threw it down at the foot of the cross and said, I can't anymore. Like, this is too much for me to carry. You got to take it. And gave that all back to God. And ever since then, I can't say it's been easy, but it's been peaceful knowing that in those times when it's not easy, that I have somebody that can walk with me. She and I, for the first time, that being Jesus transitioning there, she and I now are walking with each other in lockstep. It took a while to get to the point we're at, obviously. And we, like you said earlier, we still have our ups and downs. We still have our days where I fail her, and I'm not gonna say she fails me because that's being recorded, but she probably feels like she fails me. She's great.
So, little something there. Whenever you or your spouse are, doing life or whatever, and things come up, remember your spouse has only positive intentions for their actions, so they're doing the best that they can. So, when you run your thoughts through your filters, back up for a second when you get angry with your spouse and think, are they doing the best they can? And why did I get angry? And you may have used a filter of a negative filter, like they're intentionally trying to get after you. They probably weren't. And if they actually were, well, there's something going on, and you need to
Yeah,
get at
there's something
the
deeper there.
root cause of that. But when you filter it through the positive filter, I this morning and with the guy I share one-on-one with, I'm like, hey man, I accidentally made a mistake last week, and there's something there. It wasn't intended to be a mistake, but my wife didn't feel great about the comment I made. And I think it's an easy solution. However, I was surprised that she didn't take the comment well. It was, and I share it with him. He's like, yeah, it's kind of funny how mentally where you're at, if you're strong or if you're, tired or hungry or any of the stuff that causes us to behave poorly, sometimes you can take a comment and turn it into something that it wasn't. So.
We always want them to give us the benefit of the doubt, but we're so less likely to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, it's just natural, I think, sometimes for us to assume the worst. So that taking that step back and thinking, man, that's what's going on there. Like,
Yep, woe is
reevaluating it,
me.
isn't
I'm
it?
a victim. Everybody's against me. So when those thoughts start coming up, back up for a second, maybe reach out to a brother or, just correct your own thoughts. So take them captive and transform your thoughts. So marriage is going good. Life's together. You and your wife are lockstep with Christ now. Firefighter. 9/11, obviously, as a firefighter, had a huge impact. I don't know a firefighter that I've talked to that said 9/11 wasn't really a factor in their lives or didn't cause them to take a pause or any of that. So fast forward a little bit, and this book, Notes from Dad, it came together. Talk to us about the book.
So it's been, man, you mentioned it, I think, in the pre-show. It's just been so, it's been a long time. It's probably almost 2 years in the making. God's time, right? Not our time. I started writing. I've always been a writer. Like, I've always enjoyed writing. I started a blog in 2011, anotefromdad.com. And really, that was just a place for me to vent, to kind of pour into my kids a little bit with writing, because that's my outlet. Like, I'm public speaking's not my thing, but I can write well. I at least I've been told I can write well. The blog for me started in 2011, because at the time, my boys, they're teenagers now. At the time, they'd have been 2 and 4, and I had a couple of close calls at work where I felt like I probably should have died here. On the job as a firefighter, or at least been seriously hurt. And I felt like at the time, like, man, if I were to die or not be able to communicate with them for some reason, I want them to know who their dad was through my own words, and not having mom or my friends say, hey, your dad was fill in the blank. This is who your dad was. I wanted them to hear that from me. I wanted to find a way to connect with them and teach them all the things that as a dad I would want them to know growing up. So I started blogging. I just started writing notes. Some were short, some were long, and that grew a small following. And then in 2019, I had a I had I guess maybe a maybe an epiphany. I don't know. I had a point where the trauma of that many years so far, up to that point in the fire service, was starting to come out. I had another kind of a close call, or another incident, not a close call. I had another incident that really just brought all of my PTSD to the forefront. And I was in a pretty dark place for several years. And all of my writing kind of turned south, and not south, but dark. And so I stopped blogging, because I didn't want that to be something that they would ever see. I kept a lot of that stuff private and just use it as a healing process. But I started seeing some therapy, and worked through that PTSD over the course of probably 3 years through weekly therapy. And in May of 22, I had kind of already started writing, I think, in, well, let me flash back to like end of 21, 22, somewhere around in that time frame. I took a week off. I left my wife and my kids here at home. I took a week off from work, and I went down to some friend's house down in Florida. And they have a barn dominium on the back 40, and that's where I locked myself in the barn for a week. And I came out for dinner, but I wasn't completely antisocial. But my goal there that week was to really just reconnect spiritually with God and who I was in Christ, and then to write. And I had an idea in mind for a book, and I wanted to knock it out. And I spent the first 4 days really just praying, reading through scripture, listening to some worship songs, and really just focusing on reconnecting with God and with Christ. And then on day five, the words just flowed on the paper, and I spent 2 days just writing. And I wrote quite a bit of the first of a book, or the quite a bit of the what I would think what I thought at the time was going to be the first book. And then that week comes to an end, and I come back home, and I'm like, back into life, right? Like, back into the grind, daily work, all the distractions that aren't distractions, but they do distract from that goal of trying to sit down and be in a creative writing space. And hit a point where I'm like, I'm kind of like writer's blocked up again. Like, I don't know how to bring this thing across the finish line. And sitting down with a good friend, and he said, well, why don't you do an anthology? I'm like, I don't even know what that is. What is that? What is an anthology? And he goes, well, it's like a compilation. You just get a bunch of guys together, and everybody writes their own chapter. And now all you got to write is a chapter. I'm like, well, what's that look like? That kind of sounds like maybe we could do that. So that's kind of how this morphed, that first book I wanted to write morphed into this. And man, I'm super excited, because we've got 35 dads, all wrote a chapter. And we're talking about dads from, that are doctors. You're in there. Multiple generations multiple life experiences. Dads with five kids, dads with one kid, dads of adopted kids, dads who overcame generational trauma in their childhood, to break those curses of generational trauma. Dads who overcame abusive homes to be the dad that they are today. Just all kinds of amazing stories of love and dadvice. I think I stole that term from somewhere, but I'm claiming it because I like it. It's dadvice. It's just advice from dads. It's what we want our kids to know. Some of us wrote to our kids, you know, hey, listed them out by name, and some of us wrote to dads. And so the book Notes from Dad, encouraging dads and a fatherless generation with stories and lessons from today's dads. And that's exactly what it is. It's 35 guys that are really just hoping to encourage and empower and equip dads to be the dad that they want to be, the dad that they desire to be, to learn from our mistakes, for quite honestly, just to learn from our mistakes and the things that, and the life lessons that we picked up along the way. You know, cause none of us is perfect. We all screw it up. At some point in time or another, we're going to make that mistake. I remember back when my boys were born, in 2007 and 2009, and thinking, man, I'm going to be this, I had this image of the perfect dad in my head. Like, this is who I'm going to be, and this is what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be here for this, and I'm going to always be, and I'm blah, 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 just all laid out. Right. And I was sharing this with you earlier that I think I spent so many years. I know I spent so many years in this mindset of, man, I can't wait till he starts crawling. I can't wait till he starts walking. I can't wait till she starts talking and we can carry on a conversation. I can't wait till I can go outside and play catch with him. I can't wait till this. I can't wait till he starts school that first day of kindergarten. I can't wait until, man, it's going to be so cool when he can do this. I can't, you know, just always looking forward to what's next in their life. And now that they're teenagers and they want less to do with dad, and dad's not the forefront of their life like they are when they're toddlers. I find myself living in the past, you know. Back then as a young dad, I was living in the future, not in the moment, not enjoying those moments for what they're worth and what they are as those blessings. And I was constantly living in the future. And now I look back and I think, man, I'm living in the past, because I'm sitting in my recliner at the house. And I just told my wife this the other day. I was like, I'm looking at these pictures on the wall all the time. And these are pictures of our kids when they were pre-middle school. And I find myself living in the past, like, man, I sucked. I didn't, like, who I am now as a dad is not who I dreamt. Like, this is not what I envisioned. Like, where did I derail so wrong? Like, I just want to go back to when he was five, right? I just want to pick out that it was such a cool stage in life and I missed so much of it. So I very quickly went from living in the future to living in the past. And I've every day that struggle of saying, no, not, it's not about what was, it's not about what will be. It's about what's right here, right now in front of me. At least that's the space I'm trying to stay in. That's just, like you said, we've talked about it a couple of times already. That's a minute by minute, day by day struggle to not find ourselves living in the future or in the past, but to be where our feet are.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the guests we had, it was one of the very first ones, I think, Surviving the Storm, maybe the first, or I think it was the very first podcast that I released, episode I released, and he was a Navy SEAL. His whole goal in life was to become a Navy SEAL. And he said, I was never so depressed as the day after Navy SEAL graduation. I reached the mountaintop and looked around and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And there wasn't another mountain that was higher. I had nothing to go do, no challenges. And as I was ready to kill myself, a little bit different than looking at your kid's future, looking in their past, but does say something to appreciating the journey as you go. Matt Holliday, when he was on, he talked about Matt Holliday, the baseball player, winning the World Series and then going to the gym the next day and grinding. It's like, I didn't even take a minute, you know, I didn't take a week. I didn't appreciate winning the World Series. I was ready to win the World Series the next year and got right back at it. Because when I look back on my whole baseball career, I missed the mark on that. I didn't appreciate the here and now. instead, I was always looking at the next thing. What do I need to do now? So one thing guys can do, and I don't know if you got any thoughts on it. You mentioned like just a simple phrase like be where your feet are, is one that often goes through my head as well. And I say that on podcasts when I'm a guest, different places, but it's writing down things that you're grateful for. Just every day writing down three different things that you're grateful for. So big or small. And I probably shared this on the podcast before. I always write one thing specifically about my wife that's different every single day. So I don't write the same thing. I'm grateful for her, but something
Good
different
idea.
every day. And that helps me look for the good in my wife and helps me love her better. Also helps me, just see the here and now. This is what's going on today. And you start observing more smaller things in a more positive, grateful way, which raises your baseline level of happiness as well. So it's funny to do something to raise your baseline of happiness that you could kind of look at as a selfish thing. I'm being grateful for all these things outside of me. However, it's actually making me happier by looking outside of myself.
Yeah, I heard a quote not too long ago, and I can't remember exactly the last part of it, but it's the concept is you can't be in a place of resentment or bitterness or sadness at the same time that you're in a place of gratitude and
Absolutely.
thanks.
Yes, absolutely.
The two can't coexist. So when we find ourselves in those places where we don't want to be, doing exactly what you're saying, like going back to that gratitude journal, and man, I got so much to be thankful for. Immediately, it's a boom. I'm out of that place I don't want to be, and I'm in this place of gratitude and thanks.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you got a challenge in your life, you may apply that question to it. In this challenge, what can I be grateful for? So before we started the episode, we said a prayer, and I was like, God, we're thankful that you allowed this book together to come together on your time, not Jason's time. I know Jason was frustrated with how long it took to compile the whole thing and the editing process and the writing process and organizing guys to join and link up and the massive amount of communicating Jason had to do to keep people on track to get to the finish line. However, I think the book is a dang good book. And because it took the length of time that it took and it wasn't rushed, Jason certainly held people accountable to get it done. However, as people are, sometimes it's tough to keep them on the timeline they're supposed to be on. But nevertheless, it came together, and I truly believe, it was in God's timing. And when we look to that, often it's helping us with our patience level. It's other things come together. Or I know there was a couple guys that jumped in late that wouldn't have got in the book had it been released on time, and a couple guys fell out for whatever reason. So anyway, have you got any thoughts on that part of the journey?
I think when what comes to mind as you were saying that was, it when we're forced to slow down or sometimes speed up, but most often it's slow down to align our timing with God's timing, it reminds us that we are not the center of the universe. Right? Like, I mean, I think about it a lot when I'm in traffic and I get stuck in traffic, or somebody cuts me off in traffic or something, and it's just like, man, I'm not the center of the universe. Like this whole town I'm driving through isn't revolving around me. Like there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions of other people that God loves just as much as me. Like with impunity, with the same level of love he loves me and wants me to have joy and happiness. He wants that guy that just flipped me off and cut me off in traffic to have the same love and joy in his life. And it just reminds us that we're not it's not all about us.
Yeah, it was funny. I was driving to come over here to record, and I just had to drive a couple minutes almost through a neighborhood. And I'll be darned if there weren't a whole bunch of emergency vehicles blocking the road. And
Oh yeah.
I'm like, there's no vehicles wrecked. Apparently, something happened. I don't know what it was, but they had the road blocked off. So I literally couldn't get to where I needed to go. And I'm
Yeah.
like, what in the world? I got to drive 3 minutes and it's going to take 15, maybe, by having to go around. And I'm like, I don't know what these guys are doing, but it's
Yeah,
like,
when I think of, go ahead, I'm sorry.
yeah, no, just like, and if you put into it, how this happened to me and blah, it's like, no, stuff happens. Like, move on. And God, this is pretty funny how something like this could have been a major disaster in my own head, where It took about 45 extra seconds to
Yeah.
navigate through it.
I know, right? It's like, okay. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, as you're sharing that, I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, times in my life where it's been about God's timing, and I could probably come up with hundreds of stories through my time in ministry and serving in the church. And but what came to mind for me there was, since I'm in this headspace of my kids, like I remember being at the firehouse when they were, oh goodness, probably 3, 5 years old, and mama had brought them up to the firehouse to visit, and they were playing firefighter, right? Like if they were doing the dress up, they had my helmet on and they were running around and just having fun. And they were sitting in one of the pickup trucks. I have a really cool picture of them sitting in one of the pickup trucks with my fire helmet on and driving, just not driving obviously, but just sitting in the engine bay. And I had my 5-year-old, he had my helmet on his head. And so it's, my head is obviously much bigger than a 5-year-old's. So I ratcheted the back of it down so it actually kind of fit on his head. It was a little tighter. And we got a call for an accident on the highway, and I had to grab my helmet off his head, and we rolled out the door, and we pulled up on this accident. It was on the interstate, 4 lanes of traffic, and it was a motorcycle and a vehicle, and they were in the there was a passenger car up against the median in the left lane, and a motorcycle stopped in the next lane over, lane two. And so we stopped the fire truck in lane two in order to kind of block traffic. And I was riding the seat that day, so I was the officer and on the truck that day. And so I gave my radio report and sized up the scene, and then took my headset off and grabbed my helmet. And for whatever reason, I've never done this, Dan, in my 28 years of firefighting, put my helmet on in the truck. I always step out and then put it on as I'm stepping out the door. And for whatever reason, I put that helmet on my head in the cab of the fire truck. I still don't know why. I look back on it, and it was just God. And when I put that helmet on my head, it had just been on my 5-year-old's head, so it was too small. It didn't fit. I'm like, ah! So I was in that frustration of, dang it! And I took it off. And as I put my left hand is putting that helmet on my head, my right hand is on the door to open the door of the fire truck. And in that brief 1 half second, 1 second, 2 seconds of, oh, this doesn't fit, I didn't open the door. I took the helmet off, and then I went to open the door again. And in that 1 to 2 seconds that I went to open the door, a semi truck blew past us at full speed, shaking the whole truck. And then if he missed our mirror and that door by 6 inches, I'd be surprised. Just he just it, in that instant, it was like, man, he would have smoked
Oh
me,
my gosh.
right? Like I'd have been halfway off that door. There's just no way. That was one of those close calls that I talk about when I mentioned earlier that I felt like I probably shouldn't have survived that. That was one of the things that was the impetus for kind of starting that blog, which got us to this book. And it's just, I
Yeah,
think of that as an
whether you
instant.
got smoked, like your body got smoked, or holding on to that handle as you're opening the door.
Yes.
Does your hand release or does it not release? And if it
Yeah.
doesn't release, then you're kind of sucked into the semi, right?
Yeah. So I think of that in those, when we think about, God's timing, like it's just those little things that sometimes we never see. Sometimes it's bigger things like that that we see.
And that's just a funny little thing. So, of course, you're mad at your 5-year-old for a half a second, or, could have been mad at your
Yeah.
five. How dare he not put my.
Yeah. I know, right?
And then, logically you can pull that back and go, why did I get mad? But my first reaction often is to get angry about something because it's not quite right. And then look to the next person instead of, hey, actually, I was the one that put this on my 5-year-old's head. I was the one that adjusted it. I was the one that said, hey, you want to put on daddy's hat?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I was. I don't know that I was necessarily mad at him, because it happened so quick, right? Like in hindsight, we can sit here and kind of tear that apart, half by second or second by second, but it happened so quick. It was just that initial frustration. I don't know if I was frustrated at him, me, or whatever. I felt that
Yeah,
frustration
re
of, this
regardless, the
isn't going,
frustration, like.
yes, like this isn't happening the way it should happen. Ugh. Oh, okay. I almost died right there. But followed immediately to be like, All right, well, I got to go to work. Let's get this. You know what I mean? So you just compartmentalize that, and you're like, well, okay. And it wasn't really until afterward that you have a chance to go back and be like, oh man, that was God's timing right there. Like, you know, in the moment, you don't see it for that,
Right.
but in with the benefit of hindsight, you look back on those moments and you think, man, that was an opportunity there that could have gone much different, and forces us to realize that we're not the center of the universe and that God's timing is perfect. You know, and even if it, I say that with full well, not the knowledge that had that not happened and I would have, God forbid, stepped off that truck and been hurt or killed, God's timing's perfect, you know, and letting go of self to acknowledge that his timing is perfect goes back to that every single, like, that's a daily decision. That's a minute by minute decision to let go of self and understand that regardless of what happens to me today, God's timing is perfect, and there's opportunities for him to use that for his good.
Yeah, absolutely. So coming up, I mentioned some guys were excited about. So one of the main characters in the movie Black Hawk Down is going to come on the podcast in the future, and so he's got a story about that that is out of this world. So excited to capture that and share that with you guys.
Cool. I can't wait to hear it.
And then with the book, what were some key things that you took away since you've read it already and been involved with the guys? What are a couple of things you can share that caught your attention and you thought, wow, that was really cool, or huh, I never thought about it that way, or just any of those things that you can share with the audience.
Yep. I think every one of the dads touches on a lot of common themes. I'll say this before I answer that question. Like, when you think of like notes from dad, like, I don't want to overlook the fact that this is not just for dads. It's for young, I almost said young boys or young men, but really it's for daughters too. It's really just for anybody that grew up or is being raised in a fatherless home. There were several dads that spoke to that, like, overcoming, and I say fatherless because I think of fatherlessness as not just a physical absence, but that emotional disengagement. You know, there's a quote out there, I don't remember who said it, but I love it because I believe it wholeheartedly. There's a difference between a dad and a father. Anybody can be a father, but it takes a real man to be a dad. You know, all dads are fathers, but not all fathers are dads. And that dad is, there's one guy that wrote that what immediately struck me with his story was overcoming some generational trauma, and an abusive home as a child. In his chapter, he never once referred to his father as dad. It was always my father, my father, my father. And that reaffirms for me that there's a difference between a father and a dad. And his story talks about overcoming and that abuse and that trauma and coming to a place of forgiveness, forgiving his father. Doesn't mean they have a great relationship now. Doesn't mean they're, I don't know what their relationship looks like now. And I think when we talk about forgiveness, it's understanding that, like, we can forgive somebody and still not have anything to do with them and still disconnect from them completely and not allow them access to our life. There's a difference between, forgiving and forgetting. And forgiving to me just means we're letting go of it for myself, and I'm not going to hold on to that pain because it affects who I am today when I hold on to that. But I'm going to put safeguards or boundaries in place to protect my peace and protect my life moving forward, and that's perfectly okay. That's to be expected. You know, if I think of some of the other, I read Mike's chapter, and I just two chapters that I read that really just resonated with me. This is so long ago too, because we talked about this being like this almost a 2-year process. One of the very first chapters I asked Mike to write, and he said, "Man, you know what? I don't think." I'm not sure. I'm not sure I have anything to say, but I did write this letter to my kids that I gave to them when they were 18. Would you read that? And maybe we can use that. And I remember sitting in my recliner, my wife sitting next to me, and not too, it's just an evening after work, and I'm sitting there reading this letter to his kids on my phone, And man, I just started crying. Like, I just completely lost it. I'm crying and sobbing like a baby. And my wife's sitting next to me, and she's like, "What is wrong? What is going on? What's wrong with you? Who died?" Right? Like, it's like something's. I'm just like, man, I need a minute. And it took me a good couple minutes to put my thoughts into words and to understand why I had such an emotional, visceral response to that. And I just remember thinking, my dad is 78 some odd years old now. We have a pretty good relationship. Not great. It's not the best relationship, but it's not the worst. Like, we're somewhere in the middle. I feel like we talk once a week, and I feel like he can call me, I can call him, and we can work through stuff together. But growing up, he was as engaged as I think he could be. He was working to provide for four kids. And what I just read in that letter, sitting in my recliner next to my wife crying, like, that's what I needed to hear when I turned 18. I just read the affirmation and the acknowledgement of manhood and who you are as an individual that he wrote to somebody else. I read it as, this is for me. Like, that's how I walked into that. And I think, it's, I think back on like how the trajectory of my life would have changed if I'd have heard that as a young man. How much differently my life would have turned out to have that affirmation of me as an individual. And that's not taking anything from my dad. Dad, if you're listening to this, I mean, I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of years holding some resentment against my dad and my parents, not just my dad, my parents, for how they raised us a little bit differently. Like I said, I'm two of four boys, and I think it took me becoming a dad myself to start to begin to understand and come full circle and begin to understand that we evolve as parents, right? Like, who I was, like, I think I talked about it. I touched on that a little bit when I talk about living in the past versus living in the future versus the present. Like, we evolve as dads, as parents, because we learn as we go. Man, with that first kid, we're just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to figure this out. Like, I'm just trying to survive the day and get through this next thing. I've never experienced this before. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is your first childhood, and this is my first time being a dad. So we're gonna have to figure this out. But then by the time you get to number three and four, you're like, oh man, this is nothing. Like, we just, we repower. It's like, oh, this is those things that we take so serious in with number one, like dropping the binky on the floor. Like, oh, we gotta wash that thing. We gotta clean it. It's germs. Blah, 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 blah. So the number two is like, oh, we got the 5 second rule. It's fine. Whatever. The number three is just like, pop that thing right back in your mouth. You're good to go. It's like, it don't matter, man. We're building immunities. That's a small scale example of how we evolve as parents and how we do parent our kids differently, over the years. Not because we intend to, but just we learn as we go, and we learn hopefully what's important and what's not important, and we kind of begin to prioritize that. And so, Dad, if I go back to that, Dad, if you're listening, you did a great job. You did the best you could with what you had, and that's really all any kid could ever expect or ask for. And I appreciate it, man. I tell you what, I think the other chapter that got me was Jim's Cyclone. I'll throw his name out there. I don't care. It's a phenomenal chapter. It's dude, that's I read his talks about living in the moment as well and being where our feet are. And I think that's kind of where I was already at. And then reading through his chapter just affirms for me that I'm not alone in my struggle to find the middle ground between what was or could have been, what will or might be, versus what is right now. Because we're not guaranteed that next moment. We're not guaranteed what tomorrow is going to bring. And so just truly enjoying the moment is a lot of what I picked up from his, which was pretty good. I didn't quite cry for his, but I might have been in a different state with Mike's, but it's all good stuff. Everybody's chapter brings an element of that dad vice that's universal for all dads and all kids. It's the things that we want our dads to say to us, and we want those lessons that we want to pick up from our dad. Or if we didn't have a dad, it's the things that we would expect or have wanted to have heard or have needed to have heard.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're talking about loving your dad and affirming him, telling him that he did a great job. Our dads don't have to be perfect, but it is nice to go upwards and also let them know, hey, you did a good job, or forgiving without saying, you know, but this, you know,
Oh, but this, the old but this.
Leaving all that stuff out. But yeah, as kids, we always want to know that our parents love us. And Terry Bradshaw was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, the football quarterback, and Terry says, you know, I bought this ranch and my dad never told me he loved me all his life. And his dad was a rancher. And so they finally got to come together and spend some time together and really were connecting well. And Terry says to his dad, after, you know, he's Hall of Fame quarterback and all the things, you know, Super Bowl champion and all that, well past his retirement stage. And he says, hey dad, I know you loved us, all of us kids. I know that, like, without a doubt, 100% convicted that you loved us. But never once in your life have you ever told me that you love me. Would you tell me? He says, ah, Terry, you know I love you. He's like, yeah, I know. We just talked about that. Like, I know.
Yeah.
But would you just tell me you love me, like, right now? Ah, Terry. And so even in that time, he had a hard time. I'm like, but, you know, that took a lot of courage, you know.
Do you think that's generational? Do you think that's, like, do you see younger dads now more willing to say it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I share that story for one, because there could be some guys listening whose generational dad didn't say that. You know, I know that was a common theme my dad told me was, hey, I'm going to tell you I love you all the time, because my dad never told me. And, you know, he's got his own.
That's you talk about, sometimes we don't see that as breaking generational curses, but that's what that is. Like, that's breaking that generational cycle. Maybe not a curse, but cycle. Those generational cycles of not doing or doing things differently than our parents did, because we learn as we, like, hey, this is, I want to do that differently.
Yeah, I've got a great relationship with my dad, and it wasn't long ago, a few years ago, my dad says, you know, you can lay it out for me. How'd I mess up? I'm ready for it now.
I'm ready for it now. That's funny.
And I said, Dad, you're the best, man. Like, I hear about all these other guys' dads and stuff. And I said, but you want one? I'll give you one.
So you did, didn't you?
I'm like, you navigated all these other things so well and helped me through so much stuff. I'm like, but there was one area that, looking back, like, I can't believe you messed this up. Like, I've forgiven you for it. I've never asked for, you know, but and we talked, it was a super minor. I was never going to be a major league baseball player, but at that age, I thought the one thing dad didn't do could have prevented me from being a major league baseball player. And there was this thing called the Johnny Bench batter up. You put a little bit of concrete in a tire and you set a pole in it, and this ball would spin around on a pole. And so I could just hit away all day long. And a neighbor had one, but I didn't. I actually did, but I didn't have one set up, and I didn't have any concrete. And as a 9-year-old kid, I needed some help.
Yeah.
And so I said, Dad, that was the one thing. And I asked you and asked you and kept coming back, and there was never a right time. And he goes, yeah, I remember that. The real truth of the whole matter is I was tired. He goes, that was a time of my life where I was working so much, I was just tired.
Man, and I know you can relate to that. I feel that, like, to my soul as well. It's like, man, there's so many things I would have wanted to do, but I look back and I'm like, man, I was tired.
Yeah, I'm like, I get it. No, you're good. I'm like, I was the knucklehead kid that I got a lot to apologize for to you.
That's funny. Yeah, I wasn't quite the knucklehead kid. I got away with a lot more than my older brother did. I think I just learned from his mistakes and did a better job of hiding my shenanigans.
Yep, absolutely. So guys, you know, if you purchase this book, it'll be out. It's $1.99. I'll put the link on Kindle for a special time. If you buy the book, that'd be great. Obviously Jason and I aren't gonna get super rich off $1.99.
Yeah,
however,
no,
it's the intention behind it, it's the sharing behind it. I don't know how many different things you'll pull from it. I certainly put a lot into the chapter that I wrote. Jason and I were talking, and, you know, we had a word limit to it. He's like, oh, don't worry that you're short. I'm like, that's not what I'm worried about. I got a whole book left to write, but I've only got 200 words left to use.
I don't know, right? Yeah.
So,
yeah, we've all got that story in us. And I think I guess maybe if there's one thing I could leave with our listeners is, you know, we all as dads, you have a story in you, right? Like you, we're all so unique in our life experiences, our parenting experiences, that you have something that's unique to you, but that will resonate with other people. There's always somebody out there that's either gone through or is going through or will go through the same situations and circumstances that we find ourselves in. And maybe maybe it would behoove you to write that down and or share it in whatever form you can, whether that's videos on social media or whatever it is, small groups within your circle. But when we share those life experiences with other people, it one, I think it it's a healing process for us. It's a cathartic process for us. It's that helps us out. But it encourages other men to know that they're not alone in their struggle, or that somebody else has been there, and maybe I can pull some wisdom and some knowledge from that. And hopefully that's what this is just an opportunity for guys to pick it up and draw that encouragement and that inspiration that they're not alone, that well, scripture tells us there's nothing under the sun that's new, right? Like, we're not going through anything that Christ didn't go through. We're not going through anything that hasn't already been experienced by so many people before us. So why not draw from that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So in life, guys are around things where we need to create goals and do things and whatnot. And there's the thought process of what we're going to do or what we'd like to accomplish. And if we keep it in our head, we might not have it crystal clear as what it is that we want to accomplish. We transfer that to paper. Now we got to make it a little bit more crystal clear. And we share it with somebody else and ask them, hey, do you see what I'm going for here? That even refines it a little bit more where you're getting somebody else involved. So this process of just writing whatever it is down can help you formulate your thoughts in a better way. If you're writing things down in a way to share it with others so they learn a lesson from it, actually helps you learn a lesson and refine it better, helps you reflect. We talked about the gratitude, just writing things down that way helps you stay in the present and in the moment. So there's a whole lot to it. You don't necessarily have to share it publicly. You don't have to write a chapter of a book. You don't have to write a book. However, writing things down, for guys that aren't great at writing things down, you might just record yourself talking through something. You know, I've recorded solo podcasts, and usually after I start talking, like the third video, I'll record a video and it'll go for about a minute, and then I'll make a mistake. And then I'll record a second video and I'll go for about 2 minutes and I'll make another mistake. The third video, I usually can get 20, 30 minutes of audio recording and be pretty good. But it's kind of a process of refinement and allowing yourself to be able to get your thoughts out in a organized manner and helps you realize, huh, 95% there. I need a little bit more thinking through on something. I could use some help from another guy, from a book, from a podcast, from a whatever. So this book, Notes from Dad, I think will give you a lot of different resources in different areas, different thoughts, opinions, stories that we can relate to. Like Jason shared one story where he's literally bawling because he received something he didn't know he needed. And it's pretty cool. The guys that are in this book are a lot of local guys. A lot of them are involved in the group F3 that I talk about all the time. We got a guy who owns a brewery that's in this book. We've got a doctor. We got a guy who runs a large construction company. So these are guys over all different walks of life. Obviously, we got a firefighter and Jason. So many different walks of life. Most of the guys
We
are
got some.
super strong Christian guys. So
Yep,
I
we got
do
some
encourage you
military
guys to.
veterans, and
Yeah,
we got
tons of
some
military
stories of
guys. Yep.
stories from their military service and how that shaped their dadhood journey and experience. And guys that are we got a guy that everything from blue collar HVAC technician plumber to CFO of a 40,000 employee company. It's just it's a wide gamut of experience. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Have you got any parting thoughts that you want to share with the guys? And I always ask guys to throw a challenge out, something that can help dads, husbands be better at who they are, become something, a challenge they can do, something week to week. Could be something easier, could be something harder. Totally up to you.
So I was thinking as you were talking about just a minute ago, one of the thoughts that crossed my mind, like, what's a practical way we can, maybe we're not a writer. Maybe social media is not our thing. What's a practical way we can kind of start to put some of those things on paper or list them out. You know, how much time do you spend in the car? Can you do one of two things differently? Are you listening to informative and educational podcasts that enrich your life as a father, or as a dad, as a man, as a husband, as an employee, as a friend? Or are you just listening to the same music that you've heard 100,000 times over and over again that you could literally sing word for word? One of the things I did, I spent a long time since I've done this, and this just came to me as you were talking a minute ago, that I'm gonna kind of start to reintroduce, is to hit record on a voice memo on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
while I'm driving, or if I'm struggling with something, and just talk it out. You know, just talk it out like you're talking to somebody sitting next to you. Be raw, be emotional, throw out the curse words if you got to get it out of your head. If it's just let it go, and then when you're done, you get to where you're going, come back to it later that day or the next day or a week later and listen to it again. And what's changed? Has anything changed? Like, do you still feel that pull on your heart to affect something different in your life? Or do you look at it and go, wow, that was pretty petty. I was in a place that I probably didn't like. That's nothing like that. I was angry about something that was over 5 minutes after I walked in the office. It was not, I was worried about something coming up. How often do we spend time worrying about the next meeting, the next thing moving in, like, man, I got to perform or whatever. And then we get into it and we're like, okay, well, that's done and over with. So, I did that years ago and I haven't done that in a while. And it worked because it was a good tool to say, like I said, if you come back to it a week later and you're like, oh man, that's still bothering me, then whatever it is, how do I give it to God? Or what is he telling me I need to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's over and it's done with, and I can delete it and I can look back and think, man, that was pretty petty. Like, I don't know where our headspace was there, but I obviously that wasn't something that I needed to spend my time and my focus on. So that process helps us refine the goal of living in the moment and being where our feet are.
Yeah, we had a guest on a while back and he called it removing the root of bitterness.
Mm.
So if there's something that continually keeps showing up in your life and you can fix the surface level problem or patch over it or whatever, mm-hmm. he's like, dig a little deeper and find out what the cause is, where, you know, if you can rip that out and that can help. So yeah, I that challenge is a really, really cool challenge. Just getting it out of your head, whether you're sharing it with another guy or, mm-hmm. you know, putting on audio so you can hear your own thoughts played back to you. And you're like, huh.
Yeah, what was I thinking? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you go back and listen to yourself, one, you got to get past the fact that you sound different on tape than you do in your own head, because we hear it differently, right? Like, wait a minute, that's how people hear me? but then you immediately are like, oh man, I sound pretty petty right there. Like, that's, I sound like I was, yeah, okay, I can let that go.
Yes, yeah. And you're now on the advice side, or, all right, I'll listen to this guy. Oh, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
That idiot's, like, what are you, me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, funny thing you mentioned about the voice. So guys, if you do this one this week, and I highly encourage you to, you might not like to listen to your own voice. It might sound funny to you. So here's a quick little story, and this does it weave into a God's timing type thing. So when I started this podcast, I thought, I don't know why I kind of overlooked the sound of my voice. And then after I started doing it, I thought, oh my gosh, my voice is like not the greatest at all. And then I started hearing my voice and I thought, oh boy, thankfully we got a few listeners going, more than I had expected at the very beginning. But I thought, maybe I got to do something different. I don't know what, but my voice is going to kill this thing. And that week I was on three different, kind of national things where we had, I don't know, 100, 200 people on them. And for some reason I got to speak in front of those whole groups. In each of those, I only did three that week. In each of those three, there was a random person that I didn't know that made the comment, whether it was they jumped on the microphone and said something or they typed in the comment screen, man, whoever that guy is, like, let him just keep talking about anything. His voice is amazing. And I'm like,
that's funny. Yeah.
Thanks, God. Like, for whatever reason, that was the major struggle I was having that week. And then immediately three different sources from people I don't know showed up. And I'm like, all right, God, I got you.
Yep. All right.
I hear you loud and clear. I might not have heard it the first time, might not have heard it the second time, but that third time I got it.
Yep. That third time sometimes is a 2x4 up the side of the face. It's like, okay, I got it. I got it. I got it. It's good.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. For guys that are like, who the heck's Jason, that are F3 guys, Cherry Limeade, thanks for having you on.
I appreciate it, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, I always recommend F3, but check out F3Nation.com and look to see if there's a local group in your area. If there's not, you might be the leader to start one.
There you go. There you go.
And again, recommending Notes from Dad. So that'll be out May 18th and 19th.
16,
Six,
May
six,
16.
16th, 16th. And this podcast should be releasing right at that same time. So you should be able to jump on Amazon and buy yourself a Kindle for $1.99.
There you go. Appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. Awesome having you on. And look forward to having some more of the guys on. And guys that are listening, God bless you guys. And keep growing in your faith, keep leading your family, keep loving your wife well. God bless you guys. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Journey of a Christian Dad podcast. Thank you guys for being a light. Shine that light out and let others see it. With you guys part of this community, it helps me be accountable to you guys. It helps me be accountable to myself, be accountable to God and Jesus. Hope you appreciated this episode and picked up some great things. Hope you like the challenge and hope you can execute on that challenge this week. I ask of you, please subscribe, share the show with others. Join us inside of the Journey of a Christian Dad on Facebook, inside our private community. Share that community with others. Have your buddies join. Have other dads that are looking to grow in their faith, grow as spiritual leaders of their family. As we engage in our journey and be intentional with it, we can help others grow theirs as well. We thank you again for listening. We thank you for all your reviews. Look forward to reading a review of yours on a future show. So, dear God, thanks for blessing all of us, and thanks for drawing us closer to you. In your name we pray. Amen. Have fun, guys.